The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
With me is Jack Corgan-Jones, political correspondent with the Irish Times, and Joan Burton, former Labour leader and former Labour minister. And we'll start with overnight events in the Middle East. You heard earlier on our discussion with Greg Carlstrom, Middle East correspondent for The Economist, reporting from the Middle East on what the Mail is characterising as all-out war. Iran sending ballistic missiles into Tel Aviv, some of them successfully getting through the defence systems and landing in residential areas. And Israel, through their defence minister, saying that a red line had been crossed by virtue of the fact that the attacks had been on civilians. Joan Burton, I think a lot of people will hear that as fairly bitter irony, given what has happened to civilians in Gaza.
Well, I mean, this seems like the worst tit for tat. And I really think a mechanism has to be found internationally to actually, for instance, use the resources of the United Nations to work out some kind of peace solution. It would sound like from a number of the papers that Trump and the Americans have stood by, as it were, as this is happening. I don't think that's good enough, in the sense that it's a dangerous war. We've already had a vast number of casualties, particularly in Gaza. And Israel is very clear in all of the media today that they are going to continue to fight. But what's the United Nations for? We've very big building in New York with everybody from around the world capable of getting there. So I do think there needs to be much more of an international push. You get the feeling internationally that people are almost washing their hands of it and kind of let's look it out.
I wonder, is that to some extent driven by the knowledge that as long as the US stays, I was going to say on the sidelines, but stays in support of Israel with very little in the way of checks and balances, that there's not much the international community can do?
Well, look, I think we know in Ireland that things like talks are long and difficult, and the people involved in the talks have to put in months and years, in fact, on talking. But how do you replace war? Generally, you replace it by people who come forward and say, we want the killing to stop. And I think, in particular, I'd like to see the United States taking up a position on that, and other countries taking up a position on that, and getting to the UN as fast as possible. Because I don't see, there doesn't seem to be any peacemaking interlocutor in the Middle East who has the status to, as it were, knock heads together and bring the parties together. And Israel and Netanyahu, the Prime Minister, seem particularly determined to continue this for at least a couple of months.
Well, that was a point that Greg Carlstrom made earlier on that I thought was interesting, Jack Corgan-Jones, where he said that if the ultimate objective is to bring Iran to the negotiating table to get a new nuclear deal to reduce their desire to develop nuclear weapons, that the position they're now in turns it from being a negotiation into an ultimatum. That if they do come back to the table, it is seen as surrender, and therefore the chances of them being willing to do it have reduced to almost nothing.
Yeah, I mean, unless Israel is successful in what appears to be one of its overarching war aims, which is regime change in Iran, and you get a new regime which is less enthusiastic about obtaining a nuclear weapon. It strikes me that if the Iranians want to go down the route of obtaining a nuclear weapon, one day eventually they will, no matter how much Israel, backed by the US, is able to periodically degrade their capacity to enrich uranium, it seems that it will be rebuilt. So a corollary of that is that the only way to avoid a nuclear-equipped Iran is to negotiate your way out of it and create off-ramps and, you know, get something approaching the kind of 2015 era nuclear deal back in place. But that obviously, in the context of missiles streaking across the sky in either direction and bombs raining down on Tehran and Tel Aviv, seems an increasingly remote possibility. I mean, obviously, as Joan has outlined, the US is kind of the key broker in all this. The EU, the UN, NATO are very much kind of secondary or bit part players. I wonder whether the US would actually welcome this, to be frank. Obviously, Israel would do nothing without the acquiescence of the White House. But if you look at it from the Trump administration's point of view, I mean, Trump, there's a very serious open question over how successfully he's been on this front, but he went into office saying he was going to be a peacemaker and end these conflicts.
And he was the no-war president and his description.
And now, he emphasised that in his last term as well.
Yeah, so whether he would escalate, whether he would welcome an escalation of intensity in the Middle East, I think is open question. And then look at the downstream economic effect of this. Inflation, increase in commodity prices, not least oil and gas, all of which impact the domestic economy worldwide, but most particularly in the US. So if he's not an enthusiastic backer of this, notwithstanding what he said publicly, that begs a broader and more troubling question of the extent to which Israel is really even looking for his approval, or if they're just happy to proceed so long as there's no explicit no signal from the US. Because obviously Israel, and particularly Netanyahu, have very important domestic audiences. It is war and conflict is the kind of the engine which has kept the Netanyahu political project on the tracks for the last little while. Without the conflicts in Gaza and now between Israel and Iran, it's likely that he would not be in power now.
And the people of Gaza are really being left out in this. You know, the kind of best, in a way, that some observers are offering is that they should all leave and go someplace else. But there is no someplace else. An awful lot of Arab countries wouldn't be particularly welcome to huge numbers of people coming from Gaza into their country.
And you see the Bishops' Conference this morning in Ireland describing it as genocide.
Well, I mean, the people of Gaza, where have they got to go? They've no place to go. That's the problem. And that's why any kind of action there is just going to involve the killing of vast numbers of people, including children. There just are no safe places, certainly from what's in all of the papers today. The bombs are just raining down.
53106 at a cost of 30 cents. If you want to get in touch, 087 1400 106 on WhatsApp. Let's move to things closer to home. And housing continues to be the Gordian knot for this government and for the state. The Irish Daily Mail has a very interesting piece by their political editor, Craig Hughes, talking about the counterproductive effect, as he interprets it, of some of the rent pressure zone announcements during the week. And Jack Horgan-Jones, currently of this parish, has an interesting analysis of plans in respect of smaller apartments. This is because we have under planning law one of the largest small apartment sizes in Europe, and there's an intent now to shrink that.
Yes, so I have to confess, I'm not an expert on the apartment design standards, but certainly having talked to people both in the industry and, I suppose, more importantly, in government over the last couple of days, there is a sense there that, you know, a relaxation of the standards governing the size and the amenities within apartment blocks is where this is going next. Now, there's an important distinction to be made between the building regulations, which are things like fire safety. They're not looking at those, but apartment design standards is what they're looking at. So what does that mean? You could see a greater mix of studio apartments. You could see apartments being permitted without balconies, things like this, which add cost. Little things that you might not even think about. So there's stipulations around how long a corridor can be in an apartment block, because they don't want it to feel like a hotel. All these things are various kind of levers that they're looking to pull, the net effect of which would be that you could fit more apartments onto the same slice of land.
Now, can I ask on that, Jack? I would have thought,
or at least that's the theory,
if I am a developer and I have a chunk of land and I have a chunk of capital and I'm thinking I'm about to start building, and I read your piece in the Irish Times this morning, and I say, hang on a minute, there's a chance I can get higher density on this site. Hold off everything, lads, till we find out what the plan is here. Don't build.
Yeah, and look, that is I first heard about this kind of weeks ago, and I just couldn't quite get the story there because they were so nervous about talking about it because they were afraid of having this chilling effect. Because if you know that you're going to get more latitude down the line, you're not going to build now. The problem is, no one's building now anyway. There is effectively zero or close to zero construction going on in apartments, and, you know, in terms of planning permissions or applications going in, it's all ground to a halt. So that's a bit of an academic argument. And I think that, you know, the hope certainly from government is that they can move quite quickly here, because so long as that kind of chill effect is in place over the apartment construction market, I mean, that is a chokehold on delivery numbers.
Well, what's your take on this, Chilling? Because that's the point that Craig Hughes is making.
It sounds to me like the government is throwing in the towel, because, you know, there are not tens of thousands of young single people looking for a one-bedroom apartment that I'm aware of. What we have in terms of the housing demand is families, most of whom have children, one child at least, some of them have 3 to 5 children. And they are not looking for a one-bed apartment that's basically like a student residence hall with short corridors, reductions, for instance, of the light into the department, into the apartment in the proposed new regulations. What is that about? Can you imagine being in some kind of Eastern European style apartment of about 60 years ago with little light?
But there must be people in their 20s who are living in the parents' box room who think, I don't care, I just want to get out and get a place of my own and I'll buy somewhere better at.
No, not if you're talking about essentially buying a bedroom that's locked out from light and so on. I don't, you know, when people have been asked to pay vast amounts of money for it, I think the other issue, of course, is the developers. And, you know, Fianna Fáil is a long-standing relationship with people in the building and development industry. One of their, good points is because of that they should know the industry. But the proposals that are being put forward now are absolutely ridiculous. Bear in mind, we're talking about apartments and building more apartments. In fact, what a lot of people want are houses with a small bit of garden where they can bring up their children and have a reasonably good life. And even people who want to downsize, who are older, they can't find that smaller house. They're just not there. They don't necessarily want to be in a 20-storey building either.
Well, this is interesting because the apartment construction regulations, in theory, there was meant to be a concrete, forgive the pun, response during the week as part of the RPZ, the Rent Pressure Zones announcement, and an announcement in respect to the Land Development Agency, two of which sort of dissolved into the sands there last week. What's the sense that you get, Jack, in covering politics, that the government has a coherent, motivated, energetic, clear strategy to get this solved?
I mean, all the intent is there. To be fair, like the
phrase
reality,
that in the euro gets you on a bus.
Exactly. The reality of the situation is lost on nobody, and they know, I think, and this has been publicly acknowledged, that it's not just the kind of policy problem, that it's an enormous social problem. But like every single intervention, every single policy kind of unveils a bunch of subordinate policy problems that are remarkably difficult. And this is why housing is one of the most difficult things that they'll ever face. And the RPZs, the rent pressure zones from this week, is a perfect example of that. You know, you try and address a problem. Which is the fact that these are going to expire at the end of the year. You have to do something anyway, and the big overriding problem is lack of investment into the sector. You try and address it by effectively allowing rent reviews to occur more frequently. The corollary of that is that you will see rents continue to drift upwards, and that's an acknowledgement in all the literature that they've produced around this. The average rents are likely to go up before they come down, and that doesn't solve the kind of immediate political problem that faces you, which is that if you're a renter, you want your rent to come down. The rent is extremely high.
So the question
arises,
you have an issue where
you have a policy designed and launched, the market effect of which may or may not materialise several years down the way, but the political cost of which does accrue much more quickly.
John.
So I think the issue then is, what is the problem for the developers? Is building of any kind so unprofitable at the moment that it's simply not worth doing? Or do they have a feeling that so many people in government, in Fianna Fáil in particular, and in Fine Gael, are so sympathetic to them that they're willing to hang on and just hold on to their plot of land and just say, well, let's see if we can get a bit more money out of this.
Just how much will they sweeten the pie?
Yeah.
One final thing before we close up. The political question. Barry Andrews has joined the ranks of the people who have ruled themselves out of a desire to be our first citizen. Why does nobody want to be president?
Well, I wouldn't say nobody, but certainly nobody wants to go out early. Myself and Joan were talking about this beforehand. There's a benefit in hanging back, because if you go early, then you're the front runner and all the scrutiny and pressure builds up on you.
But a lot of people rule themselves out. Miriam McCallum is out, Francis Fitzgerald is out, now Barry Andrews is out.
That's where I was getting. There are more people ruling themselves out than in. And for every person who rules themselves out, there's generally, as there is in the Indo today where Barry Andrews has written a piece, there's a quite long list of reasons as to why you wouldn't do this. Not least, as Barry Andrews says, it's a brutal slugfest. It's a blood sport. You know, presidential elections are no holds barred.
Well,
scrutiny on the
Joan.
And
have
the
any
person,
I think. I think.
Rule yourself out.
I think. Yes, I rule myself out. I think politicians should actually go for having a nice summer, right? See their families, have some time on walk Sandymount Beach or read James Joyce, whatever you want to do. And then sometime around perhaps the 28th of August, let the fight begin. Because it's ridiculous having it now.
Yeah.
There's lots of people who may well be interested, but I'm sure they haven't even made their minds up. More importantly, they probably haven't told their nearest and dearest yet that this might be on my mind.
53106, if you want to get in touch. Big thank you to Joan Burton, former leader of the Labour Party, and Jack Horgan-Jones, political correspondent with the Irish Times. And if you want to read Jack's piece analysing the possible new rules in respect of smaller apartments, that is on the front of today's Irish Times.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.